Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. We are happy to have you on board today. Thank you for joining us. We had some fun yesterday. I did. It was fun to acknowledge the birthday of Harvard. Except, I guess it's not actually the birthday. We were acknowledging the fact that it was the anniversary of Harvard getting its name, because they didn't start out as Harvard. I think they were called Cambridge College. I could be wrong. Don't quote me, but I think it was Cambridge. But they changed their name. You know, the folks in charge over there said, let's change our name to Harvard. And it's an interesting day to acknowledge, simply because of who John Harvard was. And so we talked about John Harvard being a Puritan minister, and really the whole premise of the conversation yesterday was, my, how far the apple has fallen from the tree, where we are today in higher education versus where higher education in this country started. The founding roots of higher education were in morality, and they were in biblical morality. The founding roots of all of these universities that are just considered the prize of the country, they were started by Christians to be Christian universities. And here we are. We're in this place where these universities are no longer Christian. They no longer operate under Christian tenets and principles. And I started to speak yesterday about this incident at Johns Hopkins. I didn't quite get through the article, and I had talked about maybe wanting to play some clips of the education subcommittee, a hearing that they held in Congress a few days back. And this is so interesting. This whole idea of where we are now currently versus where we started. The juxtaposition here between then and now is just, it's unrecognizable. It's unrecognizable. I didn't quite get through all of this article here regarding the Johns Hopkins diversity chief resigning after some comments that she made. And I think it's important because I've got some clips I'm going to play for you from this congressional hearing. And these clips are important juxtaposed to this situation at Johns Hopkins. All right, we have this diversity chief here. And were you aware by chance? I don't know if you were. I wasn't aware of this until listening to this hearing. But were you aware of the number of universities that have diversity officers and the number of people that work in this department at these universities? It's mind-boggling. And my question is, why? Why do we even need a diversity officer? Well, you need to have someone in charge of making sure the university is diverse. Well, just invite the best people. Just invite, people by merit, and you're just naturally, you're going to have a diverse population. Oh, no, you won't, Dean. No, you won't. It's going to be, you're all going to be white. You have to look, I think, at the percentage of white people in the country versus another group, percentage of black people, percentage of Latino, percentage of Asian, so just base your enrollment. Look at the percentages. No, you can't do that. You have to make it so. You have to make it happen. You have to be diverse. You have to have an office of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I don't know. I don't know why you would have this office when the people, it seems, that run these offices all share this belief that this Johns Hopkins diversity chief shared. Dr. Sherita Golden. That's her name, Dr. Sherita Golden. She has stepped down from her position as a diversity chief. She's still with the university. I mean, that hasn't changed. She's just not the diversity chief anymore. So she sent out this email in the Monthly Diversity Digest. Okay, that's that, that's the name of this, whatever it is, this email digest, this monthly thing that goes out. And in it, she defined privilege as a set of unearned benefits given to people who are in a specific social group that operates on personal, interpersonal, cultural, and institutional levels. All right. So she believes that if you're part of a particular group, and she lists the groups here, and it's mind-boggling. But if you're a part of one of these groups that she lists, then you're privileged. And where you have arrived at, whatever station you're at in life, or the things that you've achieved in life, or the things that you have in life, you don't have them because you earned them. You have them because you're privileged and they were given to you. I don't know how else you can explain it. Here's what she says. The newsletter provided a list of social identity groups that supposedly possess these privileges. And it includes men, Christians, white people, able-bodied people, straight people, non-transgender people, middle-aged people, and English-speaking people. All right, that covers the majority of the population. The majority of the population in America are white, Christian, able-bodied, straight, non-transgender. I don't know about middle-aged. The majority probably isn't middle-aged, but they speak English. Okay, the English speaking is pretty much everybody. So that basically she's saying that if you speak English and you're white, then you're privileged. What you have was given to you. You didn't earn a single thing of it. And that is so offensive. And I don't get offended, but that's offensive. I'm not really offended by it because I understand the stupidity that is at the foundation of the comment. And to me, I don't get offended by stupidity. All right, I'm just going to put that out there. But I could see where it would be offensive. Here is her direct quote. She says, "Privilege is characteristically invisible to people who have it. So I don't think I'm privileged. I feel like the things that I have worked hard for them. I've earned them. And I don't think I'm privileged." And her reply is, "Well, of course you don't. It's invisible to you." This is so circular. Privilege is invisible to people who have it. People in dominant groups often believe they have earned the privilege they enjoy, or that everyone could have access to these privileges if only they worked to earn them. All right, these are things I believe. I believe that we live in the freest, most prosperous country on the planet, and we have the potential and the ability to achieve and earn things. We have the potential and the ability to set goals, to have dreams, and to pursue those goals and dreams with reckless abandon until we achieve them, because we live in America and the system is set up for that. And she would say, well, it's set up for that if you're white, or if you're male, or if you're able-bodied, or if you speak English, or if you're straight or non-transgender, or if you're Christian, or if you're middle-aged. That is a defeatist mentality to me. In my mind, that is defeatism. If you're none of these things, then and you believe this diversity, equity, and inclusion business, if you follow these tenets, but you're not in any of these groups, you're defeated. You're defeated. You have no hope. You have no hope for success because you don't believe that you're able to succeed. You have no hope for success because you believe The odds are so deeply stacked against you that you'll never achieve, you'll never prosper, so why even bother having goals and dreams? I mean, you shouldn't even pursue it. Just hang it up. Just hang it up. You know, I don't know, just go live in a van down by the river, I guess. Go join Chris Farley and live in a van down by the river. Because you're not going to succeed. You have no hope. This is the mentality. And this is horrible. This is a horrible mentality to teach our children, to teach our young people, to teach college students. This, my friends, is what makes diversity, equity, and inclusion so evil and so wicked. It's this belief right here. She is the, or was, the chief diversity officer. All right. She's the head of the program. Okay. John Hopkins. This is the medical school at John Hopkins. All right. Here is what, where is this? Representative Andy Harris. He's the sole Republican in Maryland's congressional delegation. He is a former anesthesiologist at John Hopkins. And he called Golden's comments racist. Here's what he said. This kind of woke discrimination has no place in modern healthcare and science. The problem is that this type of, and when I play the clips for you, you're gonna hear it. This type of ideology has overtaken our healthcare system. In the academia world, as students come in, this is what they're being taught. It's overrun our collegiate system. As students go into higher education, this is what they're being taught. And we know it's trickled down into public K-12. This is what's being taught. So he continues, he says, patients should think twice before seeking care at John Hopkins. Especially if they belong on one of the listed privileged identity categories. Because if they show up at John Hopkins and they're white, they're male, they speak English, they're Christian, they're straight, they're non, you know, transgender, then they're going to be treated as a second-class individual, a second-class citizen. This is the implication. He continues, this blatant discriminatory sentiment is contrary to all the principles held dear in America, and certainly not expected from an institution that receives hundreds of millions of dollars in funding from the federal government, including dollars to fund that office of chief diversity officer. And why our federal government is giving these universities to fund these, you know, diversity offices is beyond me, except the Democrats are running the show. I bet when Trump gets into office, he's going to cut the, I bet he will turn off the pipeline. He continues. This is Andy Harris, U.S. Representative Andy Harris. He says the only appropriate action on the part of John Hopkins Medicine is to fire that individual immediately. But here's the thing. If you fire this person, obviously she's resigned. She's no longer in the diversity office. Whoever they bring back into the diversity office, they're going to have the same mentality. No, the point is not to fire the person in charge of the diversity office. The point is to get rid of the diversity office. Why do you need it? And don't tell me so campuses will be more diverse. No, because these diversity offices, they create division. They don't create diversity. They create division. They create racism. They breed racism. They breed division. They breed destruction. So I want you to hear some clips. I want you to hear some clips. We're gonna dive into this, my friends, and it's where to begin. All right, we're gonna start with the subcommittee chair, Burgess Owens. Burgess Owens, by the way, he's a black man, And he's one of my favorites. Burgess Owens is, this guy's fantastic. He gets it. He is a conservative thinker that thinks logically. He understands what's going on. He understands what time of day it is and what time of hour it is. He understands the hour in which we're living, and he's intelligent about it. He has some common sense. He knows what he's talking about. Let's start with him first. You know what? Tell you what. I don't want to jump into Burgess Owens, and then we're kind of getting close to the break. I don't want to start in with him and then have to, bail out. So let's do this. Let's take our break a couple minutes early. We'll pause here. We will pick up Burgess Owens and the rest of these committee clips on the other side of this early break. All right, you're listening to the Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. You can find us here Monday through Friday at the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot. We are happy to have you on board. Thank you for listening, no matter what form you are listening in. We're just happy that you're doing it. All right, so let's start with Burgess Owens. He is the chair of this subcommittee. And it's the point of this hearing is to discuss DEI. And he has doctors from various universities and various fields that he is interviewing, all right, that the committee is asking questions of them. And these four men are giving testimony. So we're going to start out with Burgess Owens.
Today's hearing addresses a long-growing cancer that resides in the hearts of American academic institutions. Unfortunately, it's spread through our foundational institutions in the whole of Western liberal society. It's called Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, or DEI for short. Most Americans over the last 2 or 3 years have heard the term DEI, but may not know exactly what it is. There's no better way to describe it than to quote from one of DEI's most famous proponents, Ibram X. Kendi, and I quote, "The remedy of racist discrimination is anti-racist discrimination. The only remedy for past discrimination is present discrimination. The only remedy for present discrimination is future discrimination." I can summarize this definition in two words, demeaning and racist. Demeaning due to a total lack of intellectual or moral common sense, racist because anyone who accepts this irrational mindset is guaranteed to become a bigot.
So this is the opening statement to the subcommittee hearing. And Burgess Owens quotes one of DEI's biggest proponents, a man by the name of Kindi. And Kindi, his view of how to remedy racism is horrible. His entire view is let's remedy racism with more racism. And we know two wrongs don't make a right. This is what we teach our kids. Two wrongs don't make a right. Why did you hit him? Because he hit me. All right, two wrongs don't make a right. And this is early on. These are some of the early on premises that we teach when they're little. But this Kindi fellow says the remedy of racist discrimination is anti-racist discrimination. The remedy for discrimination is more discrimination. He says the only remedy for past discrimination is discrimination in the present. If there was a group of people discriminated in the past, the group that did the discriminating in the past, they have to be discriminated against now. That's how we remedy what happened in the past. That is horrible. That is horrible, destructive, despicable logic. He goes on and says, the only remedy for present discrimination is future discrimination. So based upon his logic, think through this with me. Based upon Kindi's logic, if a group of people was discriminated against in the past, the discriminating group needs to be discriminated against now in the present. But then Kindi says, the only remedy for present discrimination is future discrimination. So does that mean that the group that's now being discriminated against in the future, they can discriminate against the group that's discriminating against them now in the present? You see how backwards this is, how circular this is? Based upon his logic, the discrimination never goes away. Racism never goes away. It's always there. It's always this problem that a group of people, a particular group of people, then say, we've got the solution for. And the solution for discrimination is more discrimination, therefore never getting rid of discrimination. And this group that has the supposed solution will always be looked to for supplying the solution. They will always be the group in charge, because the group with the solution is the group in charge. That's the group with the power, because they're fixing the problem. And so the people are going to look to them to fix the problem. This whole thing is convoluted, and it's convoluted on purpose. Well, Burgess Owen sums it up in two words. He said demeaning and racist. It's demeaning and it's racist. He said it's demeaning because of its lack of intellectual and moral common sense. There's no intellectual common sense about this. Well, you discriminated against me, so the only way I can make that right is if I discriminate against you. You discriminated against me yesterday in the past, so today the only way to make that right is I discriminate against you in the present. But wait, if the only way to remedy discrimination in the present, that means we have to discriminate in the future, then you're going to discriminate against me tomorrow if I'm discriminating against you today because you discriminated against me yesterday. This doesn't make sense. So it lacks intellectual common sense. It also lacks moral common sense, because the actual remedy for discrimination, the way to end it, is to say, I forgive you. It's to offer forgiveness. That's what Jesus said. Peter said, how many times do I have to forgive my brother if he sins against me? You know, seven times? And Jesus says, no. 77. What's he say? I don't know, 77 times or whatever. I don't know the exact quote, but it's not just once. I mean, his point is, no, you don't forgive him seven times. You forgive him as many times as it takes. That's the remedy for discrimination, is to say, I forgive you. This is what Booker T. Washington led to. This is what he was implying in his book, Up From Slavery. I made reference to this a couple of days ago. Booker T. Washington is talking about this institute that he is building, that he's raising, this educational institute in Tuskegee. And he said at one point, the entire community comes out, and they come out and they're supporting this institution. They're supporting the raising of the funds, the building of the buildings. They're all involved. And I don't really recall the event or where they were, but he looked out and he saw standing side by side Black people and white people. And he makes this comment: a few years ago, those same Black people were owned by those same white people. And here they all are now in this community together, and they're locked arm in arm for the intentional purpose of raising this school to teach Black children. Well, how could that have happened if the Black people in that community had not forgiven the white people? How could that have happened if the white people in that community had not asked for forgiveness from the Black people? There was a Christian element. The God of Christianity says, I can tell you the remedy for discrimination, and it's forgiveness. But you have people here that are in charge of these DEI offices that don't want to offer forgiveness. Matter of fact, they want to keep hashing up the sins of the past. They don't want to forgive the sins of the past. They're not interested in forgiving the evils of the past. No, they want to continue to rehash the evils and the sins, because that way they can keep the pot roiled. They can keep the dirt stirred up. They can keep stirring up the mud. They can keep stirring up the anger and the bitterness and the anxiety. And if you keep the bitterness going, if you allow a root of bitterness to sink into the ground, to sink into the soil of your heart, and if that root of bitterness takes hold in the soil of your heart, my friends, you'll never have peace. There is no peace for you because you're bitter. You're bitter. You're angry. You look out at what somebody else has, and then you start saying, you don't deserve that. You didn't earn that. You just got that because of privilege. You got that because you're a white man who's Christian, who speaks English, who's straight, you know, whatever her list was. You're able-bodied. That's all. You didn't earn that. No, you had privilege. You got that because you were privileged, because a root of bitterness has set in. But forgiveness would be the remedy. Let's just, you know, the NFL, they have this slogan at the, you know, at the end of their end zones, the back of the end zones, and it says end racism, and some of the players wore it on the back of their helmets. End racism. Let's just end racism. Yet they will sing the Black national anthem, at their biggest event of the year. They'll highlight a song that promotes one race above all the others, but then they'll say end racism. It's circular. They're not interested in ending anything. If they were, on the back of their end zones, it would say offer forgiveness. That's what it would say. On the back of their helmets, it would say forgive. Offer forgiveness and forgive. Because if that would be the mantra, if that's what the people in charge of our government, of our medical institutions, of our educational institutions, of the people in leadership and business and society, if that became the mantra, then racism wouldn't disappear overnight, because people are still going to be evil, but it would decrease greatly. That's my prediction. I think it would decrease greatly. So this is how Burgess Owens starts out the whole shebang. Now, the next clip I want you to hear is from a fella by the name of James Murphy. And clearly, Mr. Murphy, I should say Dr. Murphy, I don't want to offend him. Dr. Murphy is in support of DEI.
What few, if any, DEI offices actually do is provide direct instruction to students, let alone indoctrinate them into any set of beliefs. As Mitchell Chang, interim chief diversity officer at UCLA, recently wrote, chief diversity officers spend their days on administrative duties and functions, not advocating their own political views. If anyone is trying to tell students what to think, it is legislators who want to ban these offices wholesale or write bills to make it illegal for university employees to say phrases like unconscious bias or cultural appropriation. College, we're all doctors here, is for debating ideas. It's not for protecting students from words.
So Murphy here, who wants you to know he's a doctor, says that these diversity, equity, inclusion offices, they don't indoctrinate. Officials don't share their political views. DEI is not about indoctrination, except over here at John Hopkins. You know, this chief diversity officer at John Hopkins clearly was interested in expressing her political views. Clearly, she was interested in getting this news out there for, if not indoctrination purposes, then what? What is the point? Are these not her political views? But Dr. James Murphy says, no, the DEI office doesn't indoctrinate. No, it's the legislature. They're the ones that want to tell kids what to think. They're the ones that are trying to create legislation that would make it so colleges can't use words. Words aren't evil. And then, and I didn't play the rest of the clip for you, but then he goes on to define words. He says, let's take diversity, for example. Here's the definition of diversity. And he gives us the definition of diversity, which is all well and good. It's a fantastic definition. By itself, the word is great. I mean, we love diversity. I think God created diversity. And then he goes on to define equity, and equity in and of itself is a fantastic word. It's a beautiful thing to have equity and inclusion. He defines inclusion. And everyone, we'd like to be included. Inclusion is fantastic. And he defines these words, and these words aren't horrible. Listen to these definitions. Except that's not how diversity and equity and inclusion offices use those definitions, Dr. Murphy. And if you, sir, as a doctor, are not intelligent enough to know that, then I don't know what to say to you. I can't help you. I mean, you can define those words and give us those definitions, but you've got to understand, sir, that the definitions of those words is not how these offices use those words. Hey, come on, you're a bright man. You're smart. You know better than that. I know you know better than that. Here's what Eric Smith, he is also on the panel, and here's what he has to say about it.
I have been faculty. I have been a writing program administrator. I have even been a diversity officer. Contemporary DEI is built upon a foundation whose very mission is to perpetuate racism. Contemporary DEI is not an extension of the civil rights movement. It is undergirded by a quasi-Marxist ideology called critical social justice. The salient tenet of critical social justice is this. The question is not, did racism take place, but rather, how did racism manifest in this situation? So, according to critical social justice, racism is always already taking place. There is no need to think for oneself. The narrative, one of perpetual oppression, does the thinking for you.
He then goes on to say, and I didn't let him finish, I cut him off, but he goes on to say, in case you haven't noticed, I'm a black man, and I am not in favor of DEI. Just, I mean, it's a fantastic line. You know, pay attention, people. That's what he's saying to this subcommittee. Pay attention. He said, I once was a diversity officer, and I can tell you from experience, DEI, he said, is built on a foundation whose very mission is to perpetuate racism, which takes us back to Kendi, the quote that Burgess Owens left us. Except, you know, the guy sitting right next to him, James Murphy, just got done telling us that, you know, DEI, they don't want to indoctrinate. They're not interested in sharing their political views. Why the definition of these words are great. And Eric Smith says, no, not so fast. It's built on a mission to perpetuate racism. And he said the foundation is critical social justice. And the salient tenet of critical social justice, and this is important, is they ask the question, or what they don't ask is the question of, does racism exist? That's not the question. The question is, how did racism manifest itself in this situation? So the assumption is false. The assumption is there's always racism. What we have to figure out is, at what point did it manifest itself? Instead of having an assumption of did racism happen, because racism may not have happened. But the assumption is, no, it is. It's always happening. We just have to figure out, at what point did it become observable? Because it's always there. It's always lingering. It's always lurking. It's always existing somewhere in the shadows. This is the assumption that diversity, equity, and inclusion teaches our young people. The assumption is racism is out there. Kids, keep your eyes open for it, because you have to be able to tell when it's going to show up. Oh, it happened here or here. I bet that was racism. And so now they're always looking for it, because they're taught to look for it. Because the question is, at what point did it manifest? So guess what? If you're looking for something, you're going to see it. Whether it's there or not, you're going to find it. And that is the objective. That's the goal. That's what they want. It's what they want to get to. They want to find it. All right. We're up against the break. We will pick up more clips on the other side. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop. That's AmericaOutLoud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Welcome back to The Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. All right, I want to jump right back into these clips because I feel like I'm going to run out of time today. And I don't want to not to get into this. So Our next clip is from Dr. Goldfab. This guy is fantastic. He is the fella who heads up the organization Do No Harm. And we've talked a lot about Do No Harm here. We've talked about some of the things that they're involved in and the good work that they're doing. And Dr. Goldfab has been, he's practiced medicine for over 50 years. This guy has been in the field. He has been not only a practitioner, but also on the academic side. He knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about. So let's dive right in to the testimony from Dr. Goldfab.
DEI is dangerous everywhere, but it's most dangerous in medical school. I've had a front row seat to the corruption of medical education. Precious classroom and clinical time is now devoted to issues such as climate change, homelessness, policing, and other social issues that doctors cannot change. Consider what every medical student is now required to learn. The Association of American Medical Colleges, which effectively controls medical education, now forces medical schools to teach intersectionality, oppression, colonization, and white supremacy, among other core DEI topics. These aren't throwaway lines in a one-day seminar. They infuse everything from the first year of medical school to the last year of residency. Yet every minute students spend on colonialism is one they don't spend on cancer. When they study global warming, they don't study geriatric care. One medical student recently told my organization, I've learned more about pronouns than I have about how the kidney functions.
So are we surprised that the medical community is currently being overrun with this trash? Because it's being taught to the medical students. This is what they're learning coming out. They are being taught climate change. They're being taught about homelessness. They're being taught about intersectionality. They're being taught about oppression. They're being taught about white supremacy. They're being taught about these racist issues. They're being taught about how to use pronouns. All right, let's work on your bedside manners. Make sure you use the right pronouns. When they should be learning about medical stuff. Am I wrong? Someone tell me I'm wrong here. Shouldn't they be learning about medicine? Shouldn't they be learning how to treat the patient instead of how to make sure they're using the right pronoun? You know, and maybe the patient or maybe the medical student was being facetious, you know, when he told Dr. Goldfab that he knows more about pronouns than, you know, whatever the medicine was. I don't remember whatever the treatment was there in his last comment, but the student said, I've learned more about pronouns than what I need to learn. I don't need to know about pronouns. I'm a medical student. I'm in Blooming Medical School. Teach me about medicine. And so this is where we are. And now we've got doctors pushing things on kids that is destructive to them. The first thing they're going to is, you know what? You probably need a sex operation. You know, the teenager comes in, they're depressed. Yeah, you know what? The problem is you're a girl and you really should be a boy. Let's get that sex operation going. Let's start the transition and let's just make it happen. And that is backwards thinking. It goes back to Burgess Owens' comment in the beginning, where he said it's demeaning and it's racist. And he said it's demeaning because it lacks intellectual and moral common sense. There's no intellectual common sense here. There is, as a matter of fact, I did not play this part of Eric Smith's clip. But right after he told the panel, in case you haven't noticed, I'm a black man. He said, I do not align with this way of thinking because it's not intellectual. And I'm an intellectual human being. I think intellectually. And this, I don't align with this because there's nothing intellectual about this. And Burgess Owens called it out. And he said, not only is there no intellectual common sense, but there's no moral common sense. There's no morality to this. All right. The last person we're going to hear from, I've got two clips of Jay Green. Jay is with the Heritage Foundation. And this first clip, he goes on to describe the bureaucracies of DEI. And this is just, this is something else. Take a listen.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, may sound like a set of benign values. But in practice, DEI bureaucracies advance a worldview that undermines diversity, promotes exclusion, and opposes the equal treatment of individuals based on merit. These DEI bureaucracies have grown quite large and powerful. In a recent report, my co-author James Paul and I analyzed the number of DEI staff at 65 universities that were members of the Power Five athletic conferences. We found that the average university had 45 DEI bureaucrats, or more than one for every 33 tenure-track faculty members. As the National Association of Diversity Officers in Higher Education describes their own goals, they seek to build, quote, a system of shared beliefs, values, norms, habits, and assumptions to advance EDI efforts.
That is eye-opening to me. That is, you know, 65 universities from the Power Five athletic conferences. So these are the biggies. 65 universities. And on average, each university had 45 bureaucrats. I love that he calls them bureaucrats. He says that at one point in his testimony, he says they're not teachers or professors that are involved in the normal things of teaching and research. What professors would normally do at a university. They're not involved in that. They're bureaucrats. They're involved in pushing this ideology. But, you know, Dr. James Murphy says, no, these officers, well, they don't share their political views. They're not involved in indoctrination. Well, it's the legislatures. They're the issue there. No, you know, Green says it's not that way. Did you know there was a National Association of Diversity Officers? Did you realize it was this common? Were you aware of this, that diversity offices are in practically every university out there? I mean, practically. You know, 65 universities they looked at in the Power Five Conference. And on average, they had a staff of 45 people. Were you aware of this? And that the National Association of Diversity Officers, it's their goal that throughout this entire network, they would have shared values, beliefs, norms, and assumptions. And what's their assumption? Well, who told us the assumptions? I think it was Eric Smith. It was Eric Smith's testimony. Said their assumption is not to ask if racism happened, but their assumption is racism definitely happened. You just have to figure out where it was. And this is the goal of the National Association of Diversity Officers, that on this campus, they have shared values, beliefs, norms, and assumptions, that they get this out to everybody. And this is why this diversity chief at Johns Hopkins can write in her email newsletter to her faculty there on staff at the medical school that privilege is characteristically invisible to people who have it. And but such people that have it include men, Christians, white people, able-bodied people, straight people, non-transgender people, middle-aged people. And don't forget about the English-speaking people, because they definitely have privilege. And they're not going to recognize it because it's invisible to them. These are shared assumptions. And they want this information out there. I mean, obviously, they're peppering the medical school here at Johns Hopkins with it. And, you know, Dr. Goldfab testified to this. And he said, this is what's happening. They would rather teach medical students about climate change and about oppression and about white supremacy than they would medicine. Okay. All right. I don't know if we're aware of this. I don't know if we're aware that it's happening to the extent that it's happening, but you know, we're aware today. We are aware now. All right. Let's listen to Green again. So I've got a second clip here from Jay Green. And this one's even more interesting.
Justifying unequal treatment based on group identity can yield horrific results. We've particularly seen this in the recent spike of anti-Semitism on college campuses. If classification of a group as oppressor or oppressed is determined by its over or under representation, the relatively high rate of Jews in universities supports their classification as oppressors. This is then used to justify imposing limits on opportunities for Jews in the name of equity. And harsh treatment of Jews can be justified as stripping them of privilege. Protesters on college campuses chanting anti-Semitic slogans are not just using the language promoted by DEI. We have also unfortunately seen DEI officials actively involved in promoting hatred toward Jews. Their professional commitment to inclusion apparently does not extend to Jews. These are not isolated incidents. James Paul and I analyzed the Twitter accounts of 741 university DEI staff to gauge their attitudes toward Israel and, for comparison, toward China. We found that university DEI staff are obsessed with Israel and display such vehement hostility toward the Jewish state that it clearly crosses the line into serious anti-Semitism. DEI staff tweet almost three times as often about Israel as they do about China. When DEI staff tweet about Israel, 96% of those tweets were critical of the Jewish state, while 62% of their tweets regarding China were actually favorable toward that communist country.
Of course, they're going to be favorable of communist China. I mean, after all, DEI is the brainchild of Marxism. So here we are, DEI justifies the unequal treatment of groups because they're oppressors, and the Jews are certainly oppressors. We've heard that. We've heard the Jews called oppressors on college campuses. And Green here even says in their research, in their statistical research, not only is the DEI language used to promote Jewish hatred, but DEI officials, campus officials, these diversity officers, they're out there promoting the Jewish hatred. It's ingrained in the system. So their research looked at 741 DEI staff tweets, and they have the three times more the tweets involving Israel. And 96% of those tweets are critical of Israel. 96%. Now, if we were to take, you know, Dr. James Murphy, if we were to take his testimony at face value, and I didn't play this part of the clip, but in his testimony, he describes the definition of diversity and how wonderful it is, the definition of equity and inclusion and how wonderful they are. If we're to take that testimony at face value, then we need to ask, why then, if you want diversity, if you want equity, if you want to include everyone, why are DEI staff members, 96% of their tweets, critical to a particular people group, in this case, Jews? That is a good question. You're smart for asking it. There's an article here that I just don't have time to get to today. The headline is UPenn. Oh, we're back to Penn. UPenn faculty accused of anti-Semitism attempts to stop records disclosure to Congress. So Congress wants their records. And there's faculty members here at the University of Pennsylvania that are saying, no, you can't have our records. We don't want you to see and look and see what we've got going on here. We don't really want you to see our anti-Semitism. The thing that is most troubling to me, and it's probably the thing that, actually, there's a couple of things that are the most troubling. Dr. Goldfab's testimony about what's happening in medical schools, that's troubling. The second thing that is troubling is the number of DEI offices in college campuses, the number of campuses over the country that have these offices. And my friends, this is what is permeating universities all over the country. Think twice. I'm serious. Think twice before you send your kids off to college. This is the time. We need to really strongly consider where they're going and who is influencing them and what they're going to be learning and what they're going to be enduring. All right. That is all the time we have for today, America. Thank you for joining me. Nonetheless, there's hope. We're going to make it happen. Encourage your friends and family to get on the Dean's List. Let's unite to renovate the age.